This is Alan Karpik on a Wednesday night edition of our Sunday Conversation with Brian Newbert and Tom Dean. Our pretty momentous day, I think, in a lot of ways, in terms of the Big Ten making its reaffirmation that it's going to play football. At least it's going to give it its best shot with a start on October 23rd and October 24th that weekend. And obviously, Purdue will be very much involved with that. There's still some questions to be answered. But, Tom, I guess I'll start with you. We've kind of been anticipating that this is coming down the line. But did you ever think it was really going to get here?
Yeah, if you remember, Kevin Warren penned that letter to the Big Ten community. Didn't seem like that long ago. And part of that letter, there was sort of a terse line that said this subject wasn't going to be revisited again. Seemed to be some finality as far as discussing the Big Ten fall season. But here we are, right? Thankfully, it was revisited again. We can credit several factors for that. Obviously, I think the enhanced health protocols and testing that have emerged since the Big Ten, you know, postponed the season on November 11th. So, again, good news. And, again, that the conference can move forward here. And most importantly, I think just playing in the fall keeps some normalcy to the season. The Big Ten will be a part of the college football playoff, which is good as well. And, guys, I just think to keep football out of the winter and spring of 2021 is big, to keep that calendar clear so the conference can focus on having a normal 12-game season in the fall of 2021.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a mission accomplished, at least through the lens of September the 16th, 2020. We still have over a month and a week to go before this season will kick off. Brian, I mean, one of the things that came up, at least on the early tweets and the reports about this, was that this was going to be a very strict protocol, almost to the point, and I probably me reading into it, almost a set up to fail, and that's overstated. I did not get that impression today, at least in terms of that. I got the impression that there's definitely going to be points that you're going to have to be able to make in terms of testing percentages and infections percentages, et cetera. But what was your take on that?
I think the criteria here, the infrastructure put in place, the protocols seem unbelievably thorough to me. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, when I see that every kid who tests positive has to have an echocardiogram, an EKG, I think a cardiac MRI on down the line, and then sit out for 21 days, that seems thorough. Daily testing, daily rapid response testing was always the biggest piece of this. It affects so many other components of this story, because as I've said 100 times, the best way to stop the spread of coronavirus, the best way to mitigate your concerns about myocarditis, is to know who has the damn virus and get them the hell out of circulation. And that the way to do that is daily rapid response testing. And, you know, what this comes down to is that if this hadn't come along when it did, this might not have been possible. Had this come out a couple weeks earlier, you know, we might have never, ever been having this conversation. That was always the biggest piece of this puzzle. I think the Big Ten seems like it's put forth a good plan here. I think it's important that they did this, you know, in a sound, medically minded. That's a horrible way to put it, but I think they did this in a sound, safe, and ethical manner. And I think that's the most important part of this, because for all the time we spent the last couple of weeks here talking about the college football playoff and how everybody wants football and whatnot, we so often got distracted from the fact that this is about keeping kids healthy too. And one thing you could not do here was kill a kid or maim a kid or send a kid off into the real world with some sort of long lasting affliction. And it seems to me like, you know, the Big Ten has put forth a really good plan here, a kind of a zero sum sort of deal where if something happens that causes worry, it's quickly eliminated. And we have medical innovation and the supply chain and whatnot really to thank for making all this possible, because the rapid response testing was always the biggest part of this and will remain the biggest part of this and will be the biggest part of this.
Tom, we've all watched, you know, other conferences and what's going on in the Big 12 and the ACC, and of course the SEC set to play in a couple weeks. Do you build a case that the Big Ten, and it was certainly talked about by Mitch Daniels, by several of the folks, as I recall, on the Big Ten Zoom conference. Does the Big Ten end up have the potential of really coming out smelling like in a better position because they were more thoughtful? Is that a scenario that you would you buy any stake in? And I'll let Brian, you can talk about this after Tom, but do you buy that at all?
I think so, Alan. You know, that the conference took a lot of heat, rightly so, for some of the conduct that took place from a transparency standpoint, a communication standpoint. But in the end, I think their heart was always in the right place, correct? I mean, they wanted everybody to be safe, the health protocols to be, you know, as thorough as they possibly could. And guys, not only did the Big Ten check that box as far as making sure they're offering the best health standards they can, but they're also playing football in the fall with their peers with a chance, like I said earlier, to play for the college football playoff. They're going to play 9 games, guys. Some of these other conferences would be lucky to play 8 to 10 games at the most, right? So, again, they're probably going to end up playing the same number of games as a lot of these peer conferences as well. So, in a lot of ways, like I said, they stuck true to their word as far as being concerned with their health of their student-athletes. Ryan talked about the thoroughness of their protocols. And, again, like I said, they're playing football with everybody else. So, in the end, yeah, it was rough sledding there for a while, but the conference, I think, at this point is poised to have as good a fall as any other Power Five conference.
Ryan, do you buy the save face argument? Yeah. I mean, was that part of this in your view?
I think they save face from their original rush to what was probably a flawed decision, a flawed process. But I think if you like the moral high ground, today was a pretty good day for you because the Big Ten has come out. And as Tom said, they're going to play, you know, what probably amounts to a best case scenario type of season under these conditions we're all living with at the moment. But you are also, you didn't rush into games. You actually made the difficult step to actually at one time say, we're not going to play this fall. You have obviously put in place really exhaustive protocols to keep your athletes safe. Meanwhile, Texas Tech has 75 guys or whatever it is who've had COVID. LSU has said yesterday, Ed Orgeron said most of his team has had it. And that's what other conferences are playing through right now. I know the SEC has never cared about the moral high ground, but the Big Ten has. And I think the Big Ten, you know, can come out not only having an intact season here under these circumstances in which nothing's going to be normal, but you can also credibly say we did everything we could to do this the right way as well and to keep our kids safe. And I think all along, that has been the most important part of this.
All right, Tom, this is a question I've been waiting to ask you for forever. And now we're going to talk about what kind of season can Purdue have. I mean, Jeff Brohm, as any coach would be, has to be, and he's enthusiastic. There are players that we all want to see, whether that be George Karloftis, David Bell, many others. How do you see this unit coming together? And then I'll follow it up with, we kind of talked about that on our message boards about Rondale Moore's potential availability. Doesn't look, at least in my way of looking at it, not likely, but maybe Jeff Brohm didn't shut the door on that today either.
Yeah, exactly right. I'm sure what coach wouldn't want Rondale Moore back on the roster? We'll see where that all goes. As far as Rondale Moore having interest in playing an 8-game season, again, for Purdue would be great. But first to back up, Alan, Purdue's going to sort of ease into their training camp here. They're going to maintain more of a light workout stage for a week and a half or so. September 28th, Brohm said they're going to be in shells. And it looks like, guys, September 30th could be the first full padded practice for Purdue. So, again, they'll get there eventually in full pads. Jeff talked today about the need, of course, to get these guys in football shape. You got to hit. You got to play football. You got to practice football to be good at football, and you got to do that in full pads. So they'll get there eventually. Jeff didn't think he'd have any trouble getting Purdue ready to go in, what, the 5-week run-up that they're going to have. to that October 23rd and 24th. So he feels confident in their ability to get the team ready. Now, Alan, there's still the same questions nagging Purdue that nagged him back in May, June, and July before all this blew up on us. The defense, again, they had 8 practices in the spring to learn Bob Diaco's defense. Still going to be a learning curve there. The personnel issues at linebacker, how is that unit going to look? And offensively, fellas, we all know the line's been under scrutiny for a number of years. How does that unit look? That unit really holds the key to success for the Purdue offense as well. And, again, we talked about Rondale Moore. If he doesn't come back, I mean, David Bell looks like he could be that go-to wide receiver, but we have to see him take that proverbial next step as well. So some interesting personnel questions. Still a lot to like about Purdue, but, again, still plenty of concerns as they wade deeper into their preparations for this fall 2020 season.
Brian, everybody talks, in any type of football about the quarterback, and Purdue has what appears to be at least 3 that will compete for that position. How do you look at that? I mean, you've got 2 guys that played at times very well last year, and, of course, Austin Burton coming in from UCLA, and we don't know the status of his situation, not the status of him being there, but he just hasn't played or hasn't practiced with the team. But obviously it begins and ends. Jeff Brohm's teams need to have great quarterback play.
Right. It's almost like a total restart here in so many ways, because you've not practiced hardly at all since December. And this is, or since the end of November in Purdue's case, since they didn't go to the postseason. And you have an open quarterback competition where they've not really practiced. You have a defense learning a new defense, and they've hardly even practiced. Now, they have all met. They've all met virtually probably more than any offseason in the history of college football. They've probably had more quote-unquote classroom time than ever, but you've not practiced. So all of your freshmen that you are hoping, all of those mid-year guys who came in the spring, they've hardly practiced. I keep saying that, but that's what's true. It's almost like you're starting over. And what's going to be really interesting about this training camp is how quickly you can hit the ground running, because not only have you barely practiced since November, but you can count on probably half of one hand the number of full contact practices you have had in like the past 8-9 months, right? And kind of bringing them back into football shape, in the full speed football shape and whatnot, and doing so in a manner where you're not going to get ravaged by soft tissue injuries and pulled hammies and all of this stuff. It's going to be really interesting. It could go a lot of different ways. It could go great, or it could be, the worst football we've ever seen. But the good news is it is football, and that's what everybody wanted.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that we're going to see something. We don't have enough data yet. We've only watched the ACC and Big 12 play that 1 week. We'll see. There have been some growing pains, I think, and just in a little bit I've seen of that. But it will be an interesting brand because it's October 24th. This is that weekend. That's when you're hitting stride, Tom, as a team. And typically, now you walk into a schedule where we know, at least we understand, that it will be 6 games against your Western Division opponents. And if what we understand today, it will also be Indiana as a crossover game, and then either Michigan or Rutgers. If it's Rutgers for Purdue, that might give you a little more of an advantage. If that's the reality, we don't know what's going to play out. We know we're going to hear about a schedule, but, what is a realistic expectation? It's kind of hard to, if you're a Vegas guy, it's hard to lay much on what we're going to see in terms of wins and losses this fall.
Yeah. Some people were asking me about that today. Just a 5-win team, 5-4, 6-3, 4-5. I don't know, probably somewhere in that range, I'm guessing. And you talked about the schedule, Alan. It's going to be fascinating to watch that play out. And the 9th game of the year is the interesting one, right?
Yeah.
That's the game. That's the weekend of the Big Ten Championship game, December 19th. But also that same weekend, every other Big Ten team is going to be in action playing. It's counter in the other division as far as where it finished in the standings. Second place team versus second place team. Third place team versus third place team, et cetera. So that's going to be kind of a fun wild card way to end the season. And there's also been talk, Big Ten's thinking about having some games this whole year, maybe some games on Monday nights. So again, maybe they switch the schedule around from a TV standpoint as well. This may be a year where you can sort of experiment a little bit. But yeah, the Purdue's got its challenges, I think. But again, there's plenty to play for here, guys. And Mike Bobinski's also said that there will be bowl games and that Purdue will be eligible for a bowl game, or Big Ten teams will be eligible for a bowl game. So I guess there's a chance to even play a 10th game this year.
Yeah, and you look at that, and it is going to be interesting to see how that rolls out. And will Purdue open up at Nebraska? Is that what happens? We'll find that out maybe by the end of the week. One of the things that, Brian, that you've hit on early on and kind of been on top of this topic, but is still the financial difficulties that you know, this didn't all go away today. Mike Bobinski, I thought, was pretty forthright about the fact that, yeah, if you take the television revenues and you take 8/12 of it, I mean, or 9/12, and whether that's reality or not, we don't know. But one thing we do know, there will be no gate revenue. There will be no revenue when it comes into, at least from the start. I guess they may have not completely closed the door on that for later in the year, though I would kind of doubt that, but I don't know. But Brian, that's still the elephant in the room, but maybe it's a smaller elephant as of late this morning.
Well, it is a significant amount of money that they make every year off of gate revenue among all their sports, obviously most notably football. This is also comes in the middle of a time where Purdue has, obviously the last 3-4 years, has done everything in its power to monetize football. So those numbers are all headed up, and you've been planning accordingly on having those numbers at a certain level. You've been budgeting and spending in a way where you're counting on that money to be at a certain level. You again have lost a couple home games. You were going to lose one anyway. Then you lost all your non-conference games. You're really looking at only 4 home games anyway. You're really not making a whole lot of money, if any, off of home games. And now this is a good problem to have, but you've also now picked back up all those operating expenses that come with having a season, which you were going to save if you didn't have a season. That's obviously the best of problems to have, but it is a few more million dollars now you have to spend to get to the whatever 4 or 5 places you have to go to this year, you know, to incur all the expenses you're going to incur here. They're not out of the water financially by any stretch of the imagination. You are still down all that gate revenue. You're still short from the NCAA payout in the spring that fell short. You're still down because whatever TV money you make isn't going to be as much as it would have been because you're down games. We have no, it didn't sound like Mike Bobinski knew what the TV contract was going to look like yet. So he doesn't know exactly what kind of situation they're in, but you know, Purdue had started obviously to lay people off, to furlough people, to cut people's pay, but also to raise money with their capital campaign here. Those are still necessary endeavors, I would have to think, because the number might've gone from a $50 million hole to something like 25 or 30 or some such thing. I'm only guessing. I'm only speculating, but that's still a big number, you know? And I think that, you know, that's something that, you know, still shouldn't be lost in all this, the human toll and the effect on people that this, you know, is still going to have.
Yeah. You look at the dollar figures for football ticket revenue, non-media revenue, in that $20 million range. We don't know, you know, if that's totally gone, but it likely is. And basketball too, if it gets to that, might be in the $6 to $7 million range. So you've got a fair amount of money to make up from that standpoint. But that is another thing. Another thing, and Tom, I'll start, and I know Brian, we talked before we started this interview about testing and the cost of that. Kevin Warren, I believe, was the one, or may have been the doctor that was on the committee today, talked about the cost of testing being absorbed by the Big Ten. That's a big factor as well, because this is not going to be, it doesn't sound like going to be an inexpensive endeavor to make sure that these football players are tested so that they can play.
Yeah, necessary expense, right? And it's going to be a big bill, not just for football, but again, all the other fall sports that are going to presumably be picked up, right?
Right.
And then on to the winter sports as well in spring. So yeah, big bill. But again, we all know the importance of the health and welfare of those student athletes and testing them regularly. So Yeah, again, it's not ideal, but it's an expense that has to be incurred. And again, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how soon these schools can dig themselves out of this financial hole. But, you know, as Brian said, there are expenses associated with putting on these games for the university, but at least they're getting some of that TV revenue, right? And that will lessen the blow and maybe and make the bleeding that less severe that these Big Ten schools are already suffering.
Ryan, I think you'd mentioned there have been some things about it, University of Maryland, about that actual cost.
Yeah, I could have sworn that on BTN, somebody said that the Big Ten was going to pay for everyone's tests.
That's correct.
And then somebody at Maryland, some reporters out at Maryland were reporting that the AD out there said that it would cost 700 grand to $1 million a year for the tests and that the schools were going to pay for it. So it made sense to me that the Big Ten would pay for all of this. I know the Big Ten has been negotiating on everyone's behalf, and they were trying to do this as a conference and not as individuals. So my guess is that was accurate, that what they said. I think it was Kevin Warren who said that on BTN today,
right,
that the Big Ten
so.
Was going to pay for the testing. But I guess I've seen some conflicting information, so I'd have to not say anything with any certainty there.
Well, and the thing that's interesting, of course, is, you know, in essence, the schools are paying for everything. The Big Ten is a conglomeration of funds that come in from everybody else. I mean, right, to some extent, but
the thing,
yeah,
about
it's going
testing,
to be, it is going to be expensive from that standpoint.
The thing about the testing is the rapid response stuff is supposed to be a lot cheaper than the existing tests. The polymerase chain reaction tests they've been using are supposedly like $100 a pop,
and
people are running out of them. The supply is not infinite, and that's where the rapid response testing is kind of the hero the Big Ten needs at this very moment, because it comes along when you start to worry about your supply on the PCR testing. You still need the PCR testing too, because what they're going to do is they're going to do the daily testing and then they're going to confirm positives with the PCR testing. So you do still need multiple testing methods, but it's the rapid response stuff coming along, whatever form it takes, whichever company they end up going with, that they're going to use every day. And the cadence of testing, again, is the single biggest part of this, because you get everybody every day, you get results right away, and that is your best chance to get this thing and kind of drown it in a bathtub, so to speak.
With our respective Purdue degrees, we didn't get anyone in epidemiology or whatever. At least I didn't.
I'm an expert now. This is my thing. I love it.
I know, Brian. You're pretty good. I think you should have been a science guy, or you certainly could have been. All right, Brian, I want to go back to you real quick as we're going to wrap up this Zoomcast. But I wanted to, the Big Ten basketball, and you got a question to Mike Babinski about basketball as well, but there was some information on Wednesday about schedule and plan. Give us your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it was really three pieces of information that really mattered. Everything else is to be determined, but the season is going to start, or can start. You don't necessarily have to play on the first day. The season can start on November 25th. Nobody can play more than 27 regular season games and no fewer than 13, and practice can start October 14th. Now everybody basically tears up their schedules and starts over. So the NCAA Division I Council, or whatever they're called, recommended that teams play at least 4 non-conference games. If I had to guess, the Big Ten will probably decide to play a limited non-conference schedule, try to get in some marquee matchup type of stuff, continue on with the Big Ten ACC Challenge, the Gavitt games, whatever it may be, and then probably play a 20-game Big Ten schedule. I think you're going to see I know the NCAA has not wanted schools to monopolize they've not necessarily wanted leagues to only play themselves, because they want things being spread out a little bit. Remember, the NCAA has a stake in everybody, much more than Power 5 football does. So the NCAA doesn't want everybody else getting frozen out of some of these games. But I would imagine what's going to happen here is, you know, Purdue will end up playing 4 or 5 or 6, non-conference games, preferably some higher level ones, and then probably play a 20-game Big Ten schedule. But this is very much to be determined. It has been considered, and I'm sure it will still continue to be considered, playing a full round robin 26 game Big Ten schedule. But I think coaches will be on the side of playing non-conference. I think non-conference is more important in basketball than it is in football from a postseason eligibility perspective, postseason qualification perspective. I don't think anybody wants to only play Big Ten teams, go 12-14 in the Big Ten over 28 games or whatever it is, and then not make the NCAA tournament because you played an absolute meat grinder of a schedule. So I think that you'll probably see non-conference and conference alike.
All right, Tom, last word on my other questions. You've been around college athletics most, if not all, your professional life, as has Brian. Administrators have been planners historically. They have always had schedules done 20 years in advance, and not 20, but in football it was 6, 7, 8 years. They are in a whole different mode now. I mean, you're gonna come up with a schedule on the fly. You're gonna come up with everything that has to happen to make this 8-game non or regular season for football. Brian just talked about basketball schedules being ripped up. It's just a whole different world for those guys as well. They're going to be busy trying to make all this work here over the next few weeks.
Yeah, this will be, what, the third incarnation of Purdue's 2020 football schedule. You got to be nimble in life, don't you? Yeah, they always say adapt or perish, and these conference administrators have certainly had that put to the test. I'm having to scramble on many different fronts, the biggest of which is trying to come up with financial resources to replenish somehow, some way in ensuing years. So, yeah, I'll be fascinated. Look at the schedule, guys. Barry Alvarez said today, the Wisconsin athletic director, that we should see the schedule by the end of the week, maybe tomorrow, probably Friday, possibly. But he said it was going to be the end of the week. Again, as you talked about, Alan, no great mystery as far as the opponents go. There'll be the 6 Big Ten West opponents, Indiana, and then either Rutgers or Michigan. So, again, it'll be fascinating to see that. And, 9 games in 9 weeks, too, guys. Yeah. There's no built-in bye weeks. There's no built-in fudge factor in case a team can't play a game. There's no makeup dates available here. So they're going to squeeze it all in, hope for the best, hope everybody stays healthy. And I guess they think these testing protocols give them a great chance to make a run all the way through those 9 games all in a row from – October 23rd to what, December 19th.
Brian, last word in terms of putting the cap on a historic day. I don't know how else you'd say it. I mean, we've never seen anything quite like this. We hope we don't have to again in terms of the pandemic. But what's your final takeaway from today?
It's going to be interesting. I mean, it's plausible there's situations here where if somebody can't play 1 week, you end up like Major League Baseball is doing, where some teams are going to end up playing fewer games than others. You hope it doesn't come to that, but it's just going to be, that's going to be the nature of football. Just be ready for anything. I think there are going to be outcomes determined potentially by circumstance. I think, there's going to be drop passes. There's going to be penalties. There's going to be soft tissue injuries. There's going to be, blown coverages. It's not going to be the most aesthetically pleasing football probably because of the ridiculousness of this offseason, because of all the circumstances that went into playing. But as I've kind of said, from the very onset of the pandemic, if there's football in 2020, I think the results probably matter a little bit less than they ever have, because there's victory in simply playing. So much goes into just playing. I mean, the logistics of just getting a football team ready to play in a month here, on top of everything that's going to go into game week now in terms of keeping people away from each other and whatever else goes into this, is going to be exhausting. And I don't see any real way where it doesn't, all of it combined doesn't affect the product on the field. So I think people should be happy football's back, but they shouldn't necessarily expect the crispest of football.
Interesting. And you're right. It's interesting. It gives us something to talk and write about. And we all hope it's done in a safe manner. We know that there's at least on first glance, a lot of things put together to be able to make that happen. So a lot more to come on the site. By the time a lot of you watch or listen to this, it may be Thursday anyway, but there'll be a lot more to come as we look ahead to the 2020 Purdue football season. I want to thank our sponsor, and that's the Purdue Union Club Hotel and the 811 restaurant. That we appreciate all of there. And they may have, at least parents are going to be able to go to football games. My guess is some of those parents may be staying at the Union. So we appreciate them as well. And want to thank you all for listening and watching. and hanging in there with us throughout this entire process. So we'll look forward to a lot more. Like Brian said, I think it said, well, it will be interesting, and we look forward to that. So have a great, by the time you watch this, great rest of your Wednesday night or a great Thursday, and we'll look forward to a lot more on goldenblack.com. Have a great evening, everybody. Thank you.